Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You wearing shorts as well, Chris?
Have you seen how hot it is today?
Yeah, I'm wearing shorts too, man. I should probably start this sucker up, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
And welcome to another episode. Well, no, to the first of the Mystery on the Rocks Hollywood series.
Mystery on the Rocks, do Hollywood.
Mystery on the Rocks, do Hollywood. That's it. Yeah, welcome.
I think we finally got the best intro.
Yeah,
you saying I should probably start this sucker up.
Okay, yeah, that's it. I'll probably start this sucker up.
Do a podcast right now.
And then Ken Brennan can just get his motorbike revving.
Oh, yeah, how good would that be? Yeah, start the sucker up, you just hear that, and then it like cuts to the exhaust pipe, shakes slightly as it comes
and you
out.
You just see, I get on the back, and as we're driving away, so my voice gets quieter, but I'm like, see you guys next week.
Bad to the Bone plays.
I wonder how many people listening caught the live stream last week.
Yes, actually, yeah, if you did. And if you are listening to the live stream as well, you know, like, send us an email, let us know if you're enjoying it. If there's anything you're like, Masood, you go too fast when you make the drinks. Or,
but it's okay, because you make a few more. Oh, God, I cannot believe the amount I drank 2 weeks ago. When we did 2 weeks ago,
that was quite fun. I was talking to someone on my thing after your stream, because you went and talked to John Robertson.
Yeah,
it was quite fun hearing him go, well, Suze, that's absolutely fantastic, but I think about time you went to bed.
Mystery on the rocks, oh yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Hang on a second. Who's that coming in?
Just walked in.
Welcome.
It's the listener.
The listener. Hello.
Hi, listener.
Hey, listener.
Hey, thanks for swinging by. Hey,
thank
how
you.
Are you? Okay, good. Not very chatty. That's fine.
Nothing to say. Get him a drink, Masood. What are you
I'm
making?
I'm going to get you a drink. Yeah, I'll mix you a drink. Now, that'll loosen the lips.
Yeah.
Fix him up a beef fizz, Masood.
Beef fizz. Here we go. One beef fizz coming up. What are you drinking, Chris?
All right. So I'm drinking.
Oh, this is special.
I'm drinking a Marmite Mary.
A Marmite Mary?
Yeah. You said this earlier. I said it sounds like horrible 70s slang for someone who's gay.
Yeah,
like really homophobic.
He's a bit of a Marmite Mary, that one.
Yeah, like a kid goes to the school disco in a pink shirt and everyone's like, oh, look at him, a Marmite Mary.
Marmite Mary.
Sounds like something that Gene Hunt would say.
And also, I put on such a deep voice that must have been the staff at the school that were doing it.
It's not none of the kids are talking
about. All right, Marmite Mary. Question 2 in your textbook, page 5. Go on.
How many pink shirts does a dickhead wear? Go on.
So it's called a Marmite Mary, which, I've done a variation on it because I didn't know. Basically, I wanted to make, because you were talking about a beef fizz.
Yeah.
As a joke, and I thought, oh, maybe I can make a beef fizz out of Marmite, because obviously I don't eat meat. But I then thought, there's got to be a Marmite cocktail, and there is. There's one called a Marmite Gold Rush, which I couldn't make, because one, didn't have one of the ingredients, and 2, couldn't be asked. It was quite a lot to do. But the Marmite Mary is basically just like, it's whiskey. You're supposed to use Chivas Regal 12, but I didn't have that, so I just used a really peaty whiskey called Big Pete, so it's quite smoky.
Big Pete,
yeah. So it's quite smoky.
Big Pete, Marmite Mary, they go around the bush.
So it's Marmite, it's dry sherry, so like Bristol cream, lemon juice, and then it's a Marmite and chili reduction.
Oh, so you made made the marmite into a reduction?
Yeah, I did that today when I made my lunch.
Right.
And then it's also some tomato juice, a little bit of tomato juice. And I used really, really spicy coriander hot sauce.
And it's, that sounds really good.
It's really
that
nice. Really it's good. Really nice.
Yeah. You'll have to send me the reduction thing. That sounds really good.
Amazing.
The Marmite Mary, not in this form, was made as a promotion at a bar in Birmingham like a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm.
That's quite quaint.
What about you, Suze? What do you got there? That's a nice glass as well.
Thank you. We have one cut glass short tumbler left from the divorce. this is okay. So what I'll tell you my thinking. I only had a tiny bit left of my elderflower bowls, just like elderflower triple sec, I guess. I only had a tiny bit left and I was like, what would go with that? And I was looking at my collection of drinks and I decided to add a little bit of every single spirit that I've got.
Wow.
And so that's every single spirit so that I had on the side. I'm going to call it a bloody hell.
Yeah.
Because it's
like
red.
That.
It's really red. So I'll tell you what's in it. Elderflower bowls, bourbon, Campari, dry vermouth, sweet vermouth, gin, vodka, rum. Did I say that? There's more.
That's eight spirits so far.
Cointreau. They're all the way over there. What was in it? There was more.
Judging by the size of it, there's no mixer in there.
Pessoa. No, it's just a. It's just all spirit.
Shitting hell.
Pessoa. It's every spirit. I'll put it on Twitter for people.
Fuck.
At Suze UK, follow me.
Fire up the Cointreau.
Oh my God, I'm going to call it Fire Up the Cointreau.
Yeah, that's great.
There we go. Fire Up the Cointreau.
What about you, Masood? What have you got?
This is a boxcar. So it's the same as a sidecar, but you swap out the brandy for gin. So you have gin, you have some lime, you got a little bit of orange liqueur or Cointreau, and a little bit of grenadine.
Ooh.
And you shake that up. It's very nice. It's very sweet. It's sort of like, it's a bit like a red fruit pastel.
Ooh, do you know what? This is a little bit like that.
This is something a little different, isn't it? We do Hollywood. What is that? What do you?
There are quite a few mysteries centered around Hollywood. Not necessarily the film industry, although it is part of it because it's the biggest industry in Hollywood. But through the 20th century, and certainly like during the Golden Age and stuff, there were some mysteries, and I thought it'd be cool to like do a themed series of those.
Yeah.
Rather than just picking them like we have been doing and just doing like a Mystery on the Rocks do Hollywood. Because I realised we hadn't actually covered any Hollywood ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think the closest we came was the Lady of the Dunes, who was supposed to have been in Jaws, and that was filmed in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But like because Hollywood was very seedy.
Was?
I thought let's do Mystery on the Rocks do Hollywood.
Okay.
And so that's the first one of these. We did a vote on our live stream about whether or not to pull them randomly out of a hat or whether to do them chronologically. The result was to do them chronologically. And I'm glad because I wanted to do them chronologically. I think there's something quite interesting about, like, you know, doing it sequentially.
Yeah. Is there any, like, increase in severity or strangeness?
No. I think it's just it gives a better flavour of...
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It just felt better than... Like going from 1920s to 1980s back to the 40s and stuff.
I guess each one has a flavour of that era within it.
A little bit, yeah. Don't worry, listener. This isn't going to be like a series of like 30.
No.
it's like a themed series of episodes about the seedy underbelly of Hollywood. The first one, though, was 1921, which is the death of Virginia Rapp.
Was not a rapper. I just want to make sure.
No, she wasn't a rapper.
It's a good rapper name.
And also, Virginia Rapp has got that lovely rhythm. Da-da-da-da. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Virginia Rapp.
I like a multi-syllable first name and then a monosyllabic surname. Maybe that's just because that's my name.
Christos.
Christos. Yeah.
Well, my actual name's Christopher, isn't it? So.
You
really? What? This
I
we're
could never
this.
Call you that. That's
my mind is blown.
What do you think Chris was short for?
Just all
no,
just
but
Chris.
I just figured your parents were like, we're calling him Chris.
Yeah, because some people are like that. Some people, like, they're not Ben or Benjamin, or they're not Benji or Benjamin or whatever. They're just like, I'm just Ben.
Yeah, I think maybe they looked at me when I was born and they were like, who's going to be the whitest man in his 20s or 30s?
We got to get Christopher.
Let's call him Chris.
Stokes.
So yeah, the death of Virginia Rapp is otherwise known as the Fatty Arbuckle scandal.
Yes.
I bet some people have heard of that.
Without a doubt. But her name sort of like doesn't get... Because he actually was on trial for it 3 times. And, it ruined his career.
Fatty Arbuckle was a comedian, wasn't he?
Silent movie star.
That's right. Have you heard about this, listener? Yeah, they're nodding. Thank you.
I think he was at one point the highest paid.
Oh, yeah. Silent movie actor. Oh, right.
Yeah. Wow.
Citation needed. But when this had happened, he had just... signed a contract for 3 years at Paramount for $3 million, which was huge.
He was this bigger was like, than Chaplin.
This was like back in the day when it's like the studio would just churn out like movies just like all the time. They're just like just fucking week after week. Yeah. Just like, oh man.
They called it the factory system of making movies. It's really amazing. Yeah. People on contract, and you could be on contract and as an actor, and they would not call you for the 5 years you were on contract. So you earned nothing in that. You were on a little retainer, but you don't be in any films, but you couldn't go to another studio. It's really bizarre. There were five big studios or six something.
This $3 million contract was unprecedented, so
like no one had got a contract that big, right?
So he was like riding high, and also he had this kind of like avuncular demeanor. Like he was supposed to be portly and jolly. Jolly Fat Man basically was his.
Yeah.
Right. I think back in the day when it's like, hey, listen, you're a jolly fat guy. Make a couple of jolly fat guy movies. We'll put the jolly fat guy in. Don't worry about it. It's all right.
Fall over that butter churn, would you?
We'll call you Fatty. Actually, my name is David. We'll call you Fatty. Don't worry about it. It's all right.
Thanks, Fatty. Great to have you.
So what happened with Virginia Rapp? She unfortunately died. So while people know that Fatty Arbuckle was involved in this scandal, not a lot of people... Yeah, it's not her name that comes up.
Right. People call it the scandal. Yeah.
It became this huge scandal, but she was at the centre of it. She died, and it became widely covered and massively sensationalised by the media. So it was during a party which was held on Labour Day, September the 5th, 1921, at Fatty Arbuckle's suite at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. She suffered a trauma. She died 4 days later. In hospital from.
Oh, I didn't realize. I thought she was found dead.
No.
Okay.
No. This is another thing, and that's why it became sort of like all muddied in terms of what actually happened. So she died on September the 9th from a ruptured bladder and secondary peritonitis.
Peritonitis?
Yes. So that is. I always thought it was to do with the appendix. So it's it's inflammation of the peritoneum. Lining of the inner wall of the abdomen and cover of the abdominal organs. So that's officially what she died of. The exact events of the party are still unclear because witnesses couldn't decide what actually happened.
Right, okay.
Some people that were there. But the main thrust of the story was that she had died as a result, and the ruptured bladder was and the peritonitis was brought on by a violent sexual assault by Fatty Arbuckle.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can imagine in the 20s.
So she was what, like what people say, like she was dying, or that the trauma had already been caused, and he came in, right.
That because he was cinema's golden boy, he was the nice guy, jolly fat man, a squeaky clean image, and then this comes out, and the media latched onto it, and then it became like, and I don't think it had kind of happened before, where it became such a huge scandal that it kind of like captured the.
Ended up sort of being trial by media, didn't it?
Very much so.
Because if you were on the jury, there's no way you wouldn't have heard about it.
And also, like I say, he was tried 3 times.
Three times. Yeah. Jesus.
From Fatty Arbuckle's side, because I knew the story and I knew about the 3 trials and his career was ruined and over, but I didn't know some of the little details that kind of led up to it. So he had basically the worst week of his life leading up to this.
Oh God!
So
his wife left him. His dog died.
Anvil fell on his head, and then Yellowstone cops chased him really fast, and then a house fell down, and the window went around him, and that fell.
Yeah. His usual trick of painting a tunnel and running through it didn't work.
He got tied to some railway tracks and was going help, help, but just silently.
So in the summer of that year, 1921, he was on. He'd just signed that $3 million contract, right, starring 18 silent films. He'd signed another $1 million contract with the same studio as well. So that's up to, that's like $3 million for the 3 years to star in 18 films, plus $1 million on top of that. That's $4 million. That's huge. His latest film was playing in cinemas around the country, and that's why they had this party to celebrate.
Right.
Obviously, that didn't go to plan because he was arrested. Like, by the end of the week, he was just sitting in a prison cell.
Shit.
Bail was denied as well. No, so like,
wow. The judge oh my God, they gave bail to the dude who killed George Floyd.
Yeah.
Derek Chauvin. Oh my God, it's anyone can get bail.
So they denied. Yeah. So they denied bail.
They give bail to drug dealers. This is fucking insane.
Yeah. I guess they thought he's rich and he'll flee the country or something.
So in the days leading up to this big party, he'd been in LA having his automobile serviced. But he accidentally, this happened not in one of his films, this happened in real life. He sat down on an acid-soaked rag at the garage. The acid burnt through his trousers to his arse, and it caused second-degree burns.
Oh my God!
And but in my head, when you've said that, it's all playing out in a silent movie, and he's like,
yeah, and he's waving his fist at the mechanic. Yeah. He's like,
and then he has to jump ass first into like a barrel of water, and he goes,
the steam coming from his ass. And stuff.
Yeah,
and then the shark's in the barrel for some reason. Yeah,
so that happened, and it secondary gear burns on his ass, and he was just going to cancel the trip. To San Francisco, but his friend who'd organised the party, a man named Fred Fishback.
Fishback.
He had a long Victorian twirly moustache, top hat, and a cape, and he was always going.
So he was like, "No, we're not going to cancel."
Do the voice, Chris. No, we're not going to cancel.
We shall cancel.
You shall go to the party, Fatty Arbuckle.
Fatty Arbuckle's like, okay, boys.
Let's hit the road. Don't worry about that.
Do you know how he managed to make Fatty Arbuckle comfortable in the car?
How?
Secured a rubber padded ring for him to sit on.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Like a big old whoopee cushion. And then they managed to get him, they managed to drive him up the coast where Fishback had reserved adjoining rooms and a suite as well. So in the
Is it basically like Fatty Arbuckle? It was all on his dime.
Yeah, was he paying? Was he footing the bill on this party?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know that. Oh. I imagine like money came from wherever it needed to.
Probably, I imagine the studio was probably like, yeah, whatever. We'll maybe. Because that's also the time where they're just like, they're just writing blank checks. Mm. Nobody knows what the fuck's going on.
Well,
It's boom time. The economy just keeps going up. It's a global economy now. It can't lose. But we all learned our lesson.
There was booze at the party despite prohibition.
Right.
So according to what Arbuckle said was, Fishback had arranged everything. The rooms, the guests, the booze.
Right.
So on the day of the party, on September the 5th, Arbuckle woke up and there were loads of guests there. Some of them were uninvited. He didn't know them.
I like the idea of them where he wakes up and they're in his room. He's like, well, they're just standing around his bed.
He was walking around in like his PJs and his slippers. And then he saw Virginia Rapp and a woman named Maud Delmont.
They were there together, weren't they?
Yeah. When he saw them, and he said he expressed concerns that their reputations might alert police to the fact that there was booze there, because these were, I don't want to say party animals, but they were socialites.
Hey, careful, Fishburne. These are fast women. And they're like, hey, we heard you guys had booze at your party. I can't confirm or deny it, ladies. Come on in.
Not to worry, Fatty. Everything will be fine.
He turns to walk away in disgust to get these women out of here, and then he trips over the rug. And then the chandeliers come down.
His trousers come down, and you just hear...
But the party went ahead. Booze flowed freely. He was kind of starting to kick back and relax. He was no longer focusing on his work schedule. The burns were healing on his arse. So,
he must have felt amazing.
He was just starting to feel a bit more comfortable.
Wasn't he only about 33 or something as well?
1887 he was born. So yeah, he was 33 or 34.
God, he was younger than me. And he's like,
biggest film star
big
in the world.
Star. Yeah.
Don't feel bad, Suze.
He was the Chris Pratt of his. don't worry, Fatty, we'll make you a big star. If it was today, he would have lost 5 stone.
Yeah, he'd be super cut.
You won't believe what Fatty Arbuckle looks like now. Maybe we should be calling him not so Fatty Arbuckle. Also, like pictures
of Zerg.net, you never disappoint.
His whole thing, the whole thing behind him was like his literal name is Fatty Arbuckle. He's so fat, but he's so light on his feet and could do all these stunts. You look at pictures of him, be like, that guy's not very fat.
No, he's just fairly...
He just looks like a chubby man.
It'd be like calling him Fatty Gervais.
Yeah, he was as round as like early David Brent. Yeah.
Oh, that's not fat at all.
He's no, just he's just like a guy. He's regular guy, yeah. But so then even then, I suppose you were Hollywood thin.
Virginia Rapp at the time was 26, and obviously she was found severely ill. What Maud Delmont says happened, that after Fatty Arbuckle and Virginia Rapp had had a few drinks together, he pulled her into one of those adjoining rooms, and he said to her, apparently, I've waited 5 years for you, and now I've got you.
Oh, so they knew. Oh, so they
knew Virginia Rapp because she was she was an actress and had been in a few films. And Maud Delmont was known on the scene, the party circuit,
as a lady who knows how to find booze.
And
I'll sniff it out.
After a half hour or so, Delmont said that she heard Virginia Rapp screaming.
Right.
So she knocked on the door. It was locked. She tried kicking it. After a delay, Arbuckle came to the door in his pyjamas, wearing Virginia Rapp's hat, cocked at an angle. He was smiling, and behind him, she was sprawled on the bed and moaning. And according to Delmont, Virginia Rapp had said, Arbuckle did it.
Right.
Which is a weird thing to say when there's
very
only two
odd
of them
thing
in
to say
the
when
room.
She's not dead, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
He did it. He opened the door.
They took Rapp was taken to another room and a doctor was summoned. He attended to her. She stayed at the hotel for a few days before she was taken to hospital, where she died on September the 9th of the ruptured bladder.
Yeah.
Right.
The papers then just went apeshit and had a field day with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The story that got out was that while sexually assaulting Virginia Rapp, the actor, Fatty Arbuckle, he'd ruptured her bladder and then he became painted as this...
crazed deviant.
Yeah, which went against the image that he'd was known for. He turned himself in.
Oh.
To the police. He was held for 3 weeks in jail. The mugshot of him went around the world in all the newspapers.
Mm. Imagine him trying to lift weights in the prison gym and they just fall off each end of the barbell.
His lawyers went hell for leather, insisting that he was innocent.
Right.
And they kept asking
they are lawyers.
And they kept asking the public to make no judgment until all the facts were established. Mm. But then they realised that Arbuckle himself was going to have to make a statement. But his story... Yeah. Directly contradicted Maud Delmont's.
Right. But then it wouldn't it?
It would. Because she said
Unless he did it.
She said that he'd taken Rapp into the room and she heard screaming, gone to the door, he turned up with a smile on his face, so he'd answer the door and stuff. But according to Arbuckle, he said that Virginia Rapp had become hysterical and she complained that she could not breathe and started to tear off her own clothes.
And it, I mean, that does sound like bullshit, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Really, it totally
does. She started tearing off her own clothes. I couldn't even stop her. I was like, no, please put your clothes back on.
Yeah, just
put these back on. You're repulsive.
I'm dressing you with my eyes.
He said, he insisted that he was not alone with her at any point.
Oh.
And he had several witnesses to corroborate this point.
Okay.
And then he, according to him, he found her in his bathroom being sick.
Right.
Right.
A couple of other guests tried to revive her because they thought, oh, she's drunk too much.
Yeah.
Right. And eventually they got her to a room of her own in where she could recover, which she was moved to another room. He was charged with manslaughter and he was scheduled for trial in November. Mm-hmm. And this is where a guy called, the district attorney at the time in San Francisco was a guy called Matthew Brady. And he was very ambitious.
There's a new DA in town. His name's Matthew Brady.
Because it was this huge case, biggest case in the world. He saw this as a way of furthering his career.
I can see him with his slick hair and his fancy pinstripes. Don't worry, honey. LA will be safe under my hands.
Yeah, he's definitely the guy who like walks in and is like throws his weight around, and he probably shouldn't be in a lot of the interviews and stuff, but he's just there anyway. Yeah,
he's always walking in, and the door like fully opens, like slams against the wall as he walks in. Well, what's going on here? Also, wasn't he sort of responsible for pushing this narrative where she was like this beautiful angelic sort of Madonna style creature. It was, you know, she was just a random woman.
She was just a
regular woman in her mid-20s.
Yeah, she'd been in a few films.
Pushed a narrative where she was this perfect virginal bride.
And she was known on the party scene in the movie world.
She liked to drink.
So Matthew Brady, he wanted to run for governor.
It just feels like it's such a low bar to set for yourself to run for governor. Just like, go.
He was probably thinking, one day I'll be president.
So first I gotta be governor. First, I gotta be mayor.
And he used Delmont as his star witness during the indictment hearing.
She'd been coached.
The defense had obtained a letter from Delmont. This is quite huge. So Arbuckle's defense had obtained a letter from her admitting to a plan to extort Arbuckle.
Oh, right.
Because she had a history of blackmail or all sorts of stuff.
She was a fast woman.
She was known as Madame Black. All right, so she had a history of fraud and extortion. She would procure.
She was white, right? We just want to make sure of that. Okay, good. Yeah.
She would procure young women for parties and where male guests suddenly found themselves accused of rape and then blackmailed into paying Delmont.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah. So she was.
Wow. She was the worst hustler.
So she was running a racket. Yeah.
Wow.
There's also a telegram she sent to attorneys in both San Diego and Los Angeles that say, "We have Roscoe Arbuckle in a hole here. Chance to make some money out of him."
Oh, my God. Shit. This is amazing because this is 100 years ago. And you think, what a stupid way to make money. Like, women aren't believed now.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It's really hard to get any men who've been accused of rape put in prison, even if they really obviously did it.
Yeah.
So like her going, I've got a great way to make money. We accuse these guys of doing something they shouldn't
and get them to pay us to drop the charges. If they could just see it through and be found not guilty.
Don't worry, there's literally no
even if they'd done it, they could see it through and be found
yeah
not
exactly
guilty.
Just it's do like, that
yeah and so that was discovered, but Brady, even though he knew about it, still saw it to trial. And still used her.
Shit. So he was like, doesn't matter. It's fine.
Still used the star witness. And also, there were some inconsistencies in what Delmont would say sometimes, that she knew Rap for a long time, and then other times she would say they didn't know each other before the party.
Oh, shit. So she's changing her story all the time.
Yeah, so her story was inconsistent.
And she's doing this at the trial, and people were like, yeah, it's fine.
No. When she was talking to Brady. Okay. Like, she didn't go to trial.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Without her story straight. The defense had obtained that telegram where she was planning to extort money from Fatty Arbuckle. And because her story kept changing, her testimony would have ended any chance of a trial. The judge found no evidence of rape either.
Oh.
And after hearing a testimony from one of the party guests called Zay Prevon.
Zay Prevon.
Zay Prevon.
Yeah.
Zay, take him away.
And apparently, according to Zay Prevon, Rap told her, Roscoe hurt me, on her deathbed.
Okay.
And the judge then decided... Okay. That Arbuckle could be charged with first-degree murder.
Oh, my God, right.
Shit. Brady had originally planned to seek the death penalty.
Jesus!
But the charge was later reduced to manslaughter. Now, the first trial happened in September of that year, 1921. He arranged bail after 3 weeks in jail. The trial began in November. The principal witness was Zay Prevon, who was a guest at the party. Mm-hmm. Fatty Arbuckle, he was estranged from his wife at this point. He told her that he did not harm her. I did not harm Virginia Rapp. His wife believed him, even though they were estranged, and would appear regularly at the courtroom to support him. Public opinion about Fatty Arbuckle had changed so much since the story had broken that people hated him so much and feeling was so negative that his wife, when she turned up to support him at court, she was shot at.
She was shot at?
They shot at her?
Someone pulled out a gun.
She was shot at while
going
into the courthouse.
This is your fucking fault! Jesus.
When you say that, I imagine a lot of people took shots at her, not just one person. And she's like, oh God.
It's like, and the music's going.
Yeah, she's like.
doing like high knees.
So Brady's first witness wasn't Delmont. It was a model called Betty Campbell who'd been at the party. And she testified that she saw Fatty Arbuckle with a smile on his face hours after.
This is all like such a Hollywood trial, isn't it? You could just see all these women lining up to give, I'll say whatever you want, director. And then like, enter the court in a new fur coat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, this? I can't tell you where I got it.
Brady called Betty Campbell, who was a model who was at the party, a nurse called Grace Hultson, who testified that it was very, very likely that Arbuckle had raped Virginia Rapp and bruised her body in the process.
And also he called
Dr. Edward Heinrich, who was a local criminologist, who claimed that fingerprints on the door to the hallway proved that Rapp had tried to flee the room, but that Arbuckle had stopped her by putting his hand over hers.
Because his fingerprints were also on the door handle?
Because it was a big hand over her little one.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
It's like a comical, huge door. it's like an Alice in Wonderland.
Arthur Beardsley, who was the doctor at the hotel, who was the first one to examine her.
Were doctors just in hotels?
Yeah, he's
maybe
like,
a posh hotel would have had one.
Yeah, it just feels like, imagine
bring
being
me
a hotel
the doctor.
Doctor. Yeah, like
it's just this guy in like a smoking jacket and his slippers going, I wasn't expected to be called out this late. Where's that girl?
Well, doctor.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Doctor, what do you think? She's dead.
He testified that an external force seemed to have been what damaged the bladder.
During cross-examination,
Betty Campbell, who was the model that had been at the party, she revealed, so this was revealed in court during cross-examination, that Brady, the district attorney, had threatened to charge her with perjury if she didn't testify against Arbuckle.
Oh, shit. So it came out that she was
Dr. Heinrich's claim to have found the fingerprints, they were disputed when the defence produced the hotel maid, who testified that she had thoroughly cleaned the room before any investigation took place whatsoever.
Oh, shit.
You've got to remember, she didn't die straight away. So Dr. Beardsley, the hotel doctor who examined her the first time, he admitted that Virginia Rapp had never mentioned being assaulted while he was treating her at all.
She would have done, wouldn't she?
Arbuckle's defence was able to get the nurse, Hultson, to admit that the rupture of her bladder could very well have been a result of cancer.
Oh my God.
The defence called various pathology experts, and they testified that although her bladder had indeed ruptured because it had killed her, there was evidence of chronic inflammation and no evidence of any changes preceding the rupture. So in other words, there could have been no external cause for the rupture, and it was probably a result of an underlying condition.
Well, also, like, I don't know if this is in keeping with our particular brand of podcast, but I don't know how nightmarish a penis would have to be to rupture your bladder.
Yeah, that's gotta be like, that's gotta do some serious acrobatics as well.
It wasn't his penis that ruptured the bladder. Okay. They were saying that he was so big and hefty that the pressure of lying on her.
Oh, his physical body.
That's what they were saying. Okay. They were saying
again.
He laid on her like a balloon and it just exploded.
And her bladder burst. This is quite ridiculous because like, if he was that heavy, maybe he'd have cracked some ribs.
Rather than rupture her bladder, that's not a thing. Also, in this first trial, and this didn't happen for a while, because bearing in mind there were three, Fatty Arbuckle refused to testify because the lawyers, the defence lawyers, they found obviously the evidence of Delmont's fraud and stuff, but they also found evidence of unsavory details from Rapp's past. And by unsavory, I literally just mean what society deemed to be. So, like, because she was a party girl, that was all. That was all.
Yeah.
But because they found that they were planning on using it in the court and say, well, she just liked to drink and she liked a good time.
And that makes her evil. And you're like, what?
And that she would take her clothes off at parties, because apparently it happened a few times. But Fatty Arbuckle was on trial for killing her. And he refused to let any of that stuff be used in his defence, because he didn't, out of respect for the dead.
Oh.
He was like, no, don't. You can't say anything that makes her look bad.
I will not have this woman's honour tarnished by the fact that she used to remove her coat.
And as he said that really solemnly and full of dignity, he turned on his heel and fell straight down a manhole.
But he got wedged in it.
Oh, no!
And he was like, and he's got his hands on his hips, which are just sticking out, and he's going,
oh. and then a work boy gets clicked over with his fingers, and he comes running over with a tin of grease. He puts it around the side, and then as he does that, Fatty Arbuckle just slowly starts slipping down the hole, going,
yeah. With his fist in the air.
And then that's the end of the scene, and it goes down to a little pinpoint of light, circle. What is it? They close.
Yeah,
the
just
aperture,
like an aperture.
So yeah, that was so. In the first trial, during his own defense, because he obviously had to take the stand.
That always, every time anyone we cover has to take the stand themselves, I'm always like, oh, Jesus, come on.
Sometimes they insist on it, don't they?
Just imagine the lawyer's just like, Jesus Christ.
The step beyond is when Ted Bundy was like, I will act as my own defense, and he was shit at it, obviously.
Yeah.
But he wore a bow tie to court and would just walk around going, I'm a very charming guy. But there were some survivors who'd got away from him, and he'd get them to describe what happened to them, and then just get them to describe it again, because he loved hearing it. All the while saying, I'm innocent and I'll prove it. Just say again what I did, apparently. Yeah.
Mr. Bundy, are you aware you have an erection? Nope. Yes.
Oh, it's the pleats.
It's the pleats. That's no further questions. No, there are plenty of further questions.
He stands up and the boner knocks the Bible off the thing. Just takes his seat really proud. So during his own defense, when he was simple, direct, unflustered, in his testimony, he claimed that he'd known Virginia Rapp for 5 or 6 years, that she had come into the party room around noon of the day of when she fell ill, and that sometime afterwards, somebody called May Taub, who was the daughter-in-law of somebody called Billy Sunday, I'm sure that's important, asked Fatty Arbuckle.
My God, these Billy Sunday.
Apparently,
I'll look up that name.
Apparently, May Taub had asked Fatty Arbuckle for a ride into town, so he'd gone to his room. That was when he discovered Virginia Rapp in the bathroom being sick.
Okay.
He then claimed that she had told him that she felt unasked to lie down. He carried her into another bedroom, asked a few of the party guests to help treat her. And when Arbuckle and then re-entered the room, they found her on the floor near the bed, tearing at her clothing, going into violent convulsions.
So there's various witnesses who are like, this is how
to
we
calm
found
her down.
Right.
They placed her in a bathtub of cool water. Arbuckle and Fischbach took her to the room that they moved her to, called the hotel manager and the doctor. And at this point, all those present, they just thought she was just hammered. Even the doctors thought she was hammered, and they are called here hotel doctors.
And this is the other thing as well. It's like, okay, we're gonna open this hotel. There's gonna be some pretty fucking crazy parties happening here. We're gonna need a doctor, not a good doctor, just a doctor, somebody.
Knows how to keep his mouth shut.
So, thinking that she was in good hands and thinking that she'd just sleep it off, Fatty Arbuckle drove May Taub into town. During the whole trial, the prosecution presented medical descriptions of her bladder as evidence that she'd had an illness. In his testimony, he denied any knowledge of her illness at all. And during cross-examination, assistant district attorney Leo Friedman, he aggressively grilled Arbuckle over the fact that he refused to call a doctor when he found Rapp sick, and argued that he refused to do so because he knew of Rapp's illness and saw a perfect opportunity to rape and kill her.
Oh, for God's sake. I mean, it just sounds like he found a girl who everyone assumed he was pissed. She was pissed. Yeah. He assumed, someone's had a bit too many and put her on a bed.
He calmly maintained that he never physically hurt or sexually assaulted her in any way during that party. It's weird that he had to say during that party.
During the party, and then he winked at the female members of the jury.
And then he stood up and his boner knocked the Bible off.
And knocked the Bible off. And I made a little... Is it did it?
He also stated that he never made any inappropriate sexual advances against any woman in his life. After 2 weeks of testimony with over 60 witnesses, including 18 doctors, the defense decided to rest their case. So this was in November. So it happened in September. This was in November. And then on December the 4th, the jury returned 5 days after being deadlocked. And they had a 10 to 2 not guilty verdict. So they found not guilty 10 to 2. But because it wasn't unanimous, a mistrial was declared.
Oh, my God. Right. I see. I didn't know that. Shit. I thought he'd been found guilty from the off.
Yeah. Right. Arbuckle's attorneys, they discovered that a woman named Helen Hubbard was on the jury. And she had told jurors...
The 1920s people's names. Jesus Christ. Helen Hubbard of Old Mother?
I'm just imagining a real...
of Old Mother?
Yeah, I'm imagining a really dour woman clutching a handbag like, I saw him walk into the courtroom and I knew what was up.
She told jurors that she would vote guilty until hell freezes over. And she refused. She refused to look at any of the exhibits or trial transcripts. She made up her mind in the courtroom. Yeah.
How
bizarre. And then somebody filled up her cupboards, if you know what I'm talking about. And then she changed
her husband was a lawyer who did business with the district attorney.
Oh, right. For God's sake. Right.
And they expressed surprise that she was not challenged when she was selected for the jury pool.
Yeah, that's pretty...
Oh, it's all so underhanded, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so bizarre that they went after this guy.
That was the first trial. The second trial began the following month, January 1922. Oh. New jury.
So he's then had to wait
around. New jury. Same legal defence and prosecution and the same judge.
Right.
The same evidence was presented, but this time one of the witnesses, Zay Prevon, testified that Brady, the district attorney, had forced her to lie.
Oh.
Shit. So they changed
their
story.
Another witness who testified during the first trial, a former security guard who'd worked at the studios that Arbuckle worked at, he testified that Arbuckle had once shown up at the studio and offered him a cash bribe in exchange for the key to Rapp's dressing room.
Right.
Mm, okay.
I just want to walk around in there.
Put on our coat and maybe her shoes.
Apparently it was to play a joke on her. So then this security guard said he refused to give him the key. During cross-examination, his testimony was called into question when he was revealed to be an ex-convict who was currently charged with sexually assaulting an 8-year-old girl and who was looking for a sentence reduction from the district attorney in exchange for his testimony.
Jesus.
So,
is this going to turn out like Fatty Arbuckle's the only good man in 1921?
Yeah, and there's been none since. Seems like he was the last
and he was the last good man. We're coming up on 100 years.
So,
because it sounds like everyone involved with this DA, like he is so desperate to get to the top.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
So in the first trial, Rapp's history of heavy drinking was left alone. But in the second trial, they went into detail on it. The second trial discredited major evidence, such as the fingerprints on the hotel door. Arbuckle's weren't there because the maid had cleaned them stuff. So she was like, they can't have found them because I'm a maid and I'm good at my job and I've cleaned the hotel room. So.
Yeah. I think you'll find.
I'll have you know.
I completely destroyed all the evidence in that scene. Thank you very much.
Heinrich, he was the one that said he'd found the fingerprints. He took back his early testimony from the first trial and testified that the fingerprint evidence was likely faked.
Oh, it's a mess.
And so the defence with this time, they were so convinced that there was going to be an acquittal, they didn't call Arbuckle to the stand, which was a bad move because some of the jurors took that as a sign of guilt. And after another 5 days, the jury returned on February the 3rd, deadlocked, this time with a 9-3 guilty verdict.
Worse this time.
So it's,
But that's what's crazy about that is that the first trial was the one where it looked like everything was going against him. And they found 10-2 not guilty. The second trial, where the first trial was proved to be mostly lies, they came back with 9-3 guilty.
Yeah, that's so really weird. So like they.
So it's like what Suze was saying at the start,
standing outside
but
the
like
courtroom.
Trial by media, like do you know what I mean? Like this story has been festering and festering and festering.
And then it finished, and then there was just over a month until the next trial, and the papers were all like, oh, that's going to happen. Are they finally going to find out that Fatty Arbuckle is the devil? Newspapers just spinning in front of eyes, like, woo, woo, woo.
Yeah.
The verdict for the second trial came back on February the 3rd, and then the third trial began the following month in March. By the time of the third trial, his films had been banned.
Wow.
Shit.
Newspapers.
But their contract dried up.
Newspapers had been like for 7 months had just been telling stories about Hollywood orgies, murders, sexual perversion. So Hollywood was already being, like, people were starting to see how seedy Hollywood actually was.
Yeah.
Delmont, who was the witness from way back in the first trial, she was by now touring the country doing one-woman shows. As the woman,
oh, this is amazing.
As the woman who signed the murder charge against Arbuckle, and she was lecturing on the evils of Hollywood.
And it's like months. This isn't 5 years later. She was doing this. This is months. Like, she's like, my life's changed in a moment.
Yeah. Jesus.
Do you reckon she'd started and finished on a song?
She was like,
that was Hollywood, ma'am.
That's the drink that keeps on giving, by the way, the Marmite Mary.
Yeah. Yeah.
That last sip that I just did there was as full of flavour as the first one. By the time of the third trial, this was like, they were worried because they thought he'd get off on the second one. He didn't. And already, and they were finding like majority guilty. By the time the third trial comes around, with everything that happened in the meantime as well, and the way the tide was turning, public perception and stuff, they were worried. So the defence took no chances.
Yeah.
So his defence, a guy called McNab, he took an aggressive defence, completely tearing apart the prosecution's case with long, aggressive examination, cross-examination of each witness.
Right.
He managed to get in more evidence about Virginia Rapp's medical history. And then another hole in the prosecution's case was open because Zay Prevon was out of the country after fleeing police custody and wasn't able to testify.
Oh,
like, this bird's got a fly. I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? Because they're like, I'm in sort of two minds over it, because on the one hand, like, okay, yeah, use her medical history, it makes sense, but they dug up her past. She loved to drink and take clothes off at parties. I'm kind of like, okay, she can still be sexually assaulted if that, but like you say, they were like, right, we need to use
and not only that, it was, it was 100 years ago, it's unenlightened,
it's like, yeah, I'm like, no, believe women. It's like, well, she didn't say anything.
this is another case of believe women, isn't it? Like, she never once said about the fact that she was assaulted, and yet people were still don't you worry.
Don't worry your little head, lady, we read about it in the papers.
Arbuckle, they did get him up to testify this time because they figured, like, so
he must have been fried.
Well, he was ruined at this point.
Yeah,
that's it. It's all
his
over.
Because obviously his career's been ruined, but he must have just been an absolute
wreck. And also other Hollywood stars that were his friends, pressure was put on them not to defend him in interviews and stuff.
Yeah,
Charlie Chaplin did. Chaplin did say that he doesn't or couldn't believe Arbuckle did it, and Buster Keaton did as well and got in trouble for it.
Oh, they both did. So they were big stars. Yeah.
Chaplin was in Britain though when he said it, so he didn't get his wrist slapped, but Buster Keaton, he got told off.
Chaplin, who treated women amazingly.
Oh yeah. We've all seen the movie.
How old are you? Too old.
Buster Keaton was in the courtroom at one point and provided important evidence to prove Arbuckle's innocence.
He's really nice.
I just imagine him sat there silently with his little dour
with
face.
With his sad face going, ooh.
And what do you have to say?
You, listeners, you can't see, apart from the ones in the bar, but Chris just did a very good Buster Keaton
voice. That was very, very good.
We need to do is get him a train.
And run him over with it.
Yeah, I'm sick of that guy.
So the first trial, Arbuckle took the stand. He maintained his denials, apparently did a heartfelt testimony about his version of the events at the party. And then Buster Keaton was there to provide important evidence. Delmont was involved in prostitution, apparently extortion and blackmail. That's what Buster Keaton said. So Buster Keaton outed Delmont. And then in the closing statements, the defence reviewed how flawed the case had been against him from the very start, and how Brady, the district attorney, had fallen for the outlandish charges of Maud Delmont. Bearing in mind, her story had changed, and Brady knew that as well. She got called, Delmont got called by McNab, the defence, the complaining witness who never witnessed a thing. The jury began deliberating on April the 12th. So the third trial lasted another month. So the jury began deliberations on April the 12th. Took 6 minutes to return.
That's amazing. That's nothing.
And they returned with a unanimous not guilty verdict. Now, they returned after 6 minutes, but five of those minutes were actually spent writing a formal statement of apology for putting him through the ordeal, which was a dramatic move in American justice. Now, the jury statement, I'll read it to you. Acquittal isn't enough for Roscoe Arbuckle. We feel that a great injustice has been done to him. We feel also that it was only our plain duty to give him this exoneration under the evidence, for there was not the slightest proof adduced to connect him in any way with the commission of a crime. He was manly throughout the case and told a straightforward story on the witness stand, which we all believed. The happening at the hotel was an unfortunate affair for which Arbuckle, so the evidence shows, was in no way responsible. We wish him success and hope that the American people will take the judgment of 14 men and women who have sat listening for 31 days to evidence that Roscoe Arbuckle is entirely innocent and free from all blame.
After
reading that apology statement, the jury foreman personally handed it to Arbuckle, and he kept it as a treasured memento for the rest of his life. One by one, the 12-person jury, plus the two jury alternates, walked up to his defence table. They shook his hand and or embraced him and personally apologised to him. The entire jury proudly posed with him for photographers after the verdict and the apology.
Oh, my God. God, it's crazy, isn't it? Like, the whole thing is madness, because even from the off, he was like, I don't want a party. My arse is burnt.
Yeah. And his evil and friend was like
I mean, I think you'll find you do.
There's a couple of more sad details that came afterwards. So afterwards, it was concluded that her bladder might have ruptured as a result of a dodgy abortion she might have had.
I remember this detail. Hadn't she had like 10
shortly
abortions?
Shortly before the party. Her organs had been destroyed. It was now impossible to test for pregnancy. And because alcohol was consumed at the party, Arbuckle was forced to plead guilty to one count of violating the Volstead Act, and he had to pay a $500 fine. At the time of his acquittal, he owed over $700,000, which in today's money is equivalent to over $10 million. Because it was...
it's owed. That's OJ money. That's probably what OJ had to pay for
his sell his house.
Which is why he robbed himself.
He was forced to sell his house and all of his cars to pay some of the debt, and there was no coming back from it in the public eye. Like, he's
That's it. It's over. Yeah.
Absolutely ruined. Buster Keaton and other people took pity. Pity is the wrong word, but they kind of like they supported him. They felt bad, so he did take on a pseudonym and worked as a film director behind the scenes. And
I heard this. Yeah, he was able to make a living.
His pseudonym was
Tubby Carmichael.
Tubby Carmichael. His alias was William Goodrich.
Billy Goodrich.
Otherwise, sometimes known as Will B. Goodrich.
That's on the nose.
He directed a few films. He also did manage to return to acting in the late 20s, I think, and did some short reel, like, you know, what were they called? The short reel films.
There's like two reelers.
He did some of them. And just before he died, he died of a heart attack in 1933 at the age of 46. Apparently, I couldn't find any corroboration for this, so it might just be a flourish of a sad story, but apparently he'd just signed a contract with Warner Brothers to make a feature film on the day that he died.
Oh, really?
But the
just as he's signing it, like, William B.
But I mean, the thing is, like, it's still no one's ever going to know what happened in the hotel to Virginia Rapp. I think what we can confirm is that Arbuckle probably didn't do it.
No, nothing points to it, does it? Also, when in trials like that these days, they will patterns of behaviour will be taken into account, and his pattern of behaviour would suggest no, it's not, like, with all the other evidence plus his pattern of behaviour, it doesn't suggest that that's what he gets up to.
I mean, it's one of these things, isn't it, where it could be like a series of unfortunate events that all conspire to make it look like. So what if Delmont was involved in this scheme,
extortion,
of getting women for parties and then accusing people of sexual assault. Virginia Rapp's underlying health condition caused this to happen, and Delmont saw that as a further opportunity to be like, well, we can get him for something else as well as...
We can get him for murder or something.
And
we can
played into the hands of the district attorney who wanted to be governor, because he's like, this will be the case of my career.
It feels like a real perfect storm of all of these horrific people in the same place at the same time. Like, you've got this shitty DA and you've got this woman who is doing this extortion racket. The extortion racket thing is, I mean, she probably was, right? She definitely was. Was she? I don't know. But like...
Well, no, it does sound like it. Like, she's a hustler, a grifter.
And so, the fact that she went on around, like, months after the fucking trial was like, time to hit the take the show on the road. Yeah.
And this is like quite a bad singer going, oh, the sun rises over the old hotel.
The DA sounds like he sounds, yeah, like, well, like a silent movie villain. Like he's just like, he's like, I gotta be the governor. And at any cost, anything it takes, that's what I gotta do. And it feels like a lot of that, you know, is caught up in just this kind of just a fucking horrible, it just, all of it feels really shit at the same time.
Oh, it is, isn't it? It's really grim and underhand. And it's, I mean, this is the first in our series, but I think stuff like this will come up a lot.
Oh,
Hollywood has a seedy underworld. I don't know if you saw the year 2017 and what came out.
I mean, it's something I didn't know a lot about, this Fatty Arbuckle thing. I knew very little. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's crazy just the amount of all that and all the people involved that were so...
It's a really sad story, isn't it? There's like no winners.
No one won.
Oh, apart from Delmont. Delmont's I'm living the high life.
Yeah. What do you think happened, Suze?
He probably barely registered it. Yeah. He was on his way out to drive someone somewhere. And he went, oh, she's hammered. Put her on a bed and left. Like, I don't think Fatty Arbuckle sexually assaulted this woman, seeing as she never said he did, and there were no signs of it other than the media going, I think we know what happened here.
What about you, Chris? What do you think?
I reckon that she was taken advantage of royally, both before she died and after she died, by Brady and Delmont. I think I think it's very possible that Delmont had this racket going when she realised that Virginia Rapp had fallen ill, quite so ill at this thing, and then it was this that had happened to her and she eventually died from it. I think she saw that as like a really good way of nailing Arbuckle for a lot of money.
Yeah, very possibly.
And then I think actually she realised that rather than getting the money from Arbuckle, she could just collude with Brady.
I think as soon as he stepped in and sort of showed his cards,
I'll scratch. I'll scratch your back. You scratch mine, because you got to remember that her story was full of holes, and he still took it to trial.
Yeah, exactly.
So amazing, isn't it?
That's nuts.
Well, I mean, I've got something here that might interest you. This is a very rare recording. It's the only one I could find of Delmont's closing song from her one-woman show. Would you like me to play it?
Yeah.
All right. All of you, you're completely outrageous. You want one more?
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. I'll tell you how I became a fast woman in the hardest town to make it in all of the USA.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got the face of an angel, the mind of a fox, you're sick of these men calling all the shots. It's time to become, oh, sing it real good, the fastest woman in Hollywood. You can go to fine parties, drink illegal booze, take advantage of fellas who'd ordinarily use you. If one ends up in jail and you get a sweet tour, it's collateral, honey. I'm just getting what's yours. Men have run this STEM show for thousands of years. Women winning for once is their ultimate fear. I'm demanding what's mine right now and right here. Oh, deal with it, boys. I've turned duplicity into a career. So I'm easy to hate. I accept that it's true. You despise the idea that men are easy to screw. Virginia died, and it's sad, and it's the end of this song. My friend is gone, and her story wasn't very long. Virginia Rapp was killed unsuspiciously. We knew it all along. She died literally from a drinking game gone wrong. Hey man, why aren't you clapping? Isn't that amazing to have?
How did you find that? How did you find that, Sue?
Yeah.
I inherited from a very old relative a collection of 1920s erotica.
So that's the first part of our...
Yeah, that was our first Hollywood...
Our Do Hollywood series.
Awesome.
We call it Hollywood Case Files. That's fucking crazy. I didn't know... This is the thing. I don't know so much about the seedy underbelly of Hollywood. So that's... thanks, Chris. That was super awesome.
Yeah, that was wicked. And if you're listening to this on Thursday morning, tonight... Thursday evening, every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. join us at twitch.tv/mysteryontherocks for our crazy
last
live
week's
stream.
Was incredible. Like,
oh my good god,
oh,
it was
jump on our YouTube to watch that.
So great.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can find all of us also individually on Twitch if that's your bag. So Suze,
twitch.tv/SuzeKempner.
Chris,
twitch.tv/Chris_Stokes. There'll be something on there soon.
There'll be something on those. And I'm twitch.tv/MasoodMilas. And we're also doing, you know, jump on our social media and all that stuff. You want to email us and be like, hey guys, I'm really enjoying the Hollywood series, but you've missed this
one.
Yeah,
do that.
You can get us on mysteryontherocks@gmail.com, or you can just find us on social media, Mystery on the Rocks, but Rocks is spelled R-O-X.
Because X gonna give it to you.
Yeah.
And if you've just chanced upon this, why not subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, listener, as well, for swinging by the bar. Swing by next week.
That's weird. They just walked straight out.
They didn't
the
even say goodbye.
Shut. Well, they just stormed out and didn't even say thanks or pay for their drink.
Unbelievable.
We'll see you next week for another Hollywood case file.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.